Morning, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning. So what we do here in the meditation hall is very personal, right? It's very sort of individual. We're all here, we're together, supporting each other, but yet the journey that we undertake is very inward, right? This is not where we live, right? We live out there. And so we are part of that. And what we're learning in here is how to often heal, transform, and also resist many of the afflictive conditions in which we function in this world. And I say that because I'm sure you're all aware of what, you know, the news this morning is, more killings. You know, we have a strange country, don't we? It was founded in violence, right? I mean, we know all about the Constitution, and we know about the ideals and all the freedoms. But yet also there was extreme violence. Violence that we did to the inhabitants of this country. When we came here, the violence and brutality of slavery, the people that we forced to come here to work for us. And then throughout our history, we have often maintained hatred and violence towards peoples. And, you know, the object has changed over time, but the underlying darkness that is in the American experience is still omnipresent in the world, our world. Buddhist psychology teaches that every human mind has positive and negative seeds, right? But because, as I said earlier, we are not conscious beings, consciously cultivating the wholesome, consciously not cultivating the unwholesome, we are very much the reflections of our environment, right? Our families, our culture, our societies, our schools, right? And so in all those areas, seeds are being either nourished or not nourished, right? So even though our journey begins very individually, learning to look at our own minds, so we can understand our minds, so we can heal and transform our minds, we have to understand that the external conditions of our society, which means culture, which means politics, which means news, which means education, all these things are watering seeds in people, wholesome and unwholesome. And so these are, you know, when we see these almost regular, it seems, outbursts of violence. Underneath the violence is what? Hatred, anger, fear. And that it is manifesting in somebody's mind, right? I mean, I'm all in favor of, you know, shouldn't be AK-47s on the streets, but you know, there is a certain truth. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. And a person they are acting from their mind. And in their mind is great distortions, great hatred and, you know, anger. And so it is very important that we live in a society, we live in a culture, we live in a political environment in which wholesome seeds are being nourished, Right? But when we live in an environment where the unwholesome, right, is being nourished, you know, these kinds of experiences that we see will become more and more prevalent, you see, because it is in those kinds of minds that have great anger and fear and disturbance, when those messages touch that, those seeds in them, those seeds will grow, right? And then they will manifest. And so, you know, we need to understand that. There is a relationship to our response to this great, manifestation of violence and hatred, which is so pervasive in our society, and what we are doing here. Minds have to be changed. Cultures have to be changed. Societies have to be changed. But they can only be changed by other human beings who have the capacity within themselves to stand for and live another way. You know, when I saw the headlines this morning, I could only think of one of the earliest Buddhist teachings from the Dhammapada. In this world, hate never yet dispelled hate. Only love dispels hate. This is the law, ancient and inexhaustible. You too shall pass away. Knowing this, how can you quarrel? This was, said 2,600 years ago. And all the great teachers, love thy neighbor as thyself. Right? The golden rule, people grow up with that, and yet seems to be absent. These most fundamental teachings, seem to be absent from the public discourse. So these are dark times. So it is very important in dark times that we light our light strongly. Is that clear? Yeah. But this Buddhist teachings on wholesome and unwholesome seeds, which we'll talk about more in a little bit, is very important so we understand what's going on here and why political solutions will never do it. Right, because political solutions are something that are imposed on people, right? But it will only end when the minds and hearts of human beings are changed, right? When they understand teachings like this. And so, as Thich Nhat Hanh has often said, and all the great apostles of nonviolence have said, it is important that our response to hatred, to violence, to intolerance, to, all these things, always be a willingness to make sure that within ourselves we have uprooted, not just tamped down, but we have uprooted and transformed those seeds. Until we can sit here and say, my mind is free of hatred toward others. My mind is free of any desire to harm another human being. Right? I no longer have hatred in my mind. I only have love and understanding. Then we can really enter the world with something that can really transform it. So again, I'm not saying that political, social responses to these kinds of things aren't helpful in the short run, but they will never uproot it, because the problem isn't the problem of the human mind. But you probably all understand that, right? So it's I think often we forget the relationship of what we do here and our own personal transformation and how that relates to what we go on around the world. Whoever pulled that trigger was pulling the trigger because of their thoughts. Right? And those thoughts were nurtured. Nurtured by that person within themselves, nurtured by what their social media messages were, by politics, by new, you know what I mean? It was nurtured. It didn't come out of nowhere. Right? We are all interconnected. Yeah, so it is because of what goes on in the world that we practice. Right? That is our inspiration. That has always been the inspiration that we cultivate the awakened mind in order that we can end the suffering of this world, the beings of this world. You know, why are we here? We're here to learn another way, aren't we? To learn another way. And unfortunately, there are many people in this world who don't even have an idea that there's another way to live, do they? Yeah. So that is why it's important that we practice diligently, seriously. But I'm sure you all know this. So what I want to talk about today, we're coming back to the very personal. How many of you have not been, this is sort of the fifth week of kind of a series that have developed, began with Darlene 4 or 5 weeks ago, trying to help people see that the stories that they tell about themselves in life are not the same as the reality. And I believe Brian weighed in a couple of weeks ago to continue that. And then I added my delusions last week. So here we are again. So these are very simple concepts. But they are revolutionary. Okay? So how many people have not been here for these talks over these weeks? Oh, okay. Well, let me, some of them are online. You can listen to them. So just for the sake of time and to move ahead. Quite simply, there is the world. The things we see, the things we smell, the things we hear, the things we touch, the things we taste, and the things that we sense in our body. That is the way we know the world, right? I mean, that's it. Our five senses are the way we know the world. And yet, our receptivity to the data that comes in through our senses is not pure because we are thinking about. We are thinking about the data. We are organizing the data, and we organize them into perceptions, stories, right? There's a so-and-so, and there's a so-and-so. And I like this, and I don't like this, and, you know, I have issues around this, and I have issues, that's all arising in our mind. Those are thoughts. Though they're thoughts about reality, that's not reality. Right? Our thoughts about a person is not the same thing as the person. Is that true? So, understanding that our thoughts about reality, our stories about reality, including our own reality, our own stories about ourselves and our past and our family, these are things that we have created in our mind. Right, based on how our minds organize the data it's received. Okay, nobody in here, I believe, has absolute recall of every moment of their life. Does anybody have absolute recall of the hundreds of thousands of millions of nanoseconds of minutes of experience of their life going back to the womb? I would be quite happy to meet you. Yeah. If I said to you, how much conscious memory do you have of all the hundreds of thousands or millions of moments of experience you've had throughout your life, what percentage of all that do you think you actually are consciously aware of and can remember? Would you imagine it's quite tiny? Yeah. So knowing that, even our memories are quite, you know, for some reason, some have been retained and most haven't. Is that true? Right? So this is a very imperfect mechanism. Now, yet, at the same time, based on this very little data, right, we are storing lots of thoughts and feelings and memories about ourselves in life, right? Right? Which we then rely on as we are currently getting information. Right? The data is coming in and our minds are organizing it, all right? We like this, we don't like this, he's a good person, this and that person, I'm a this, I'm a that, right? So we're constantly organizing the data, even in the present. Now, what's the sorting mechanism? See, that's an interesting question. What's the sorting mechanism? Yeah, but what's the likes and dislikes? What's sorting that? Where's that coming from? You see? Well, it's coming from what in Buddhism is called our storehouse consciousness. Our conscious mind is very tiny. It's blip, 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 right? Always changing. Thoughts coming and going. Thoughts coming and going. But yet, there's some persistence in our likes and our dislikes, you know, why do I have the same likes and dislikes today that I had last week? Right? I mean, every moment is fresh and new, all the data is new. You know, why do I still like this and don't like this? You see, where's that coming from? Well, in Buddhism, we say there's a storehouse part of our mind. It's the biggest part of our mind. And all the impressions of everything we have thought and felt is there. And a lot of them, because we've done it quite repeatedly, thought we have a certain belief about our childhood, or our mother, or our father, or our parents, or life, or me, or the right, or people, or they've become formations. So they're kind of bigger than just a thought and a perception. They're like a formation, right? And so that is what is the consistency of our issues, of our likes and dislikes. And it's all unconscious, right? So we think it's what? We think it's me. But it's not me who's really organizing my life. It's very unconscious. It's all based on this unconscious way that somehow I've kind of organized unconsciously life. Are you with me? You see? And between our conscious mind, our five senses and our thinking mind, and this deep storehouse consciousness, there's like an intervening filter. And in that intervening filter is something that is called the self, I me mine, right? That self-ego consciousness basically puts its stamp on everything. So everything that's coming up from our storehouse consciousness is all me, mine. This is who I am. And everything that I see going around me is also being filtered through me. So as I go through my day, my basic orientation toward life is what? Me. You know, what's in this for me? Do they like me? Do they love me? Are they noticing me? Are they speaking to me the way I want them to speak to me or not? You know, what's going on with my things? You see, our whole orientation is, I mean, there's a whole world out there, right? But we're only concerned with what? Me. Right? See, I'm not concerned if everyone else is getting their needs met. I'm only concerned about what? Am I getting my needs met? Right? You see? And I mean, I could go on and on and on. So this is so this is the deal. Right? And so the problem before us is, do I understand that? Can I get that conceptual picture of what's going on here? This is education. This is learning. And then can I work with that to make my life workable? And one of the first things, and this is what Darlene and Brian were talking about, is about the stories we tell ourselves about life and ourselves and everybody else. Are we willing to, one, ask ourselves, as they arise, is this true? This is fundamental Buddhism. Is this true? And when you ask yourself about, is it true, you in most cases will, if you reflect on it, will go, I don't know if it's absolutely true. Right? Your thoughts you have about yourself, your stories you have about yourself and everybody in your life, are you absolutely sure that every story you have is absolutely true? Are you willing to subject all your beliefs, all your thoughts to that simple criteria before you act? Now, the problem is we don't do that. A thought arises. I can't believe she said that. Right? And immediately we act as if what? That's true, and therefore we immediately have an emotional response and we immediately react. Is that true? And there's no space to go, is that true? Do I really know what's going on with that person? I mean, am I a mind reader? Do I understand all their causes and conditions that have brought them to this moment? See? See, we take it all what? Personally. Right? I mean, that's common knowledge. Don't take things personally, right? People tell us that. Or we're even better at telling other people that. You know, I mean, when it's happening to us, you know, this is real. But what happens is, oh, you know, maybe you're taking things too personally. You see, we're very wise with others. Now, why are we wise with others? Because we have some objectivity, right? With ourselves, we have no objectivity. We only have subjectivity. We are so lost within ourself. We're so lost within the truth of our stories, the truth of our feelings, right? The truth of our history, the truth of our issues. You know, again, we are incredibly helpful to other people, aren't we? There are probably people here, and yet the person who really needs our help, which is ourselves, we are unhelpful to. Right? So, we have these endless pristories. It's a common word these days. It's not really a Buddhist word, but Buddhist was more about thoughts and perceptions. But stories is a modern kind of, you know, we have these stories. We think they're true. We act on them. We react on them. We feel on them. Are we willing to acknowledge they may not be true? Are we willing to step back from them and look at them and turn them into hypotheses? Remember? Hypothesis, you know. Is it true? And the truth is, we don't know. We don't even know ourselves. We don't even know why we do what we do, do we? No, I mean, many people, we're a mystery to ourselves. I have no idea what I'm doing. And yet we think we have the truth on everybody else. But people are complex. Many, 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 many things are going on in their mind. You've just sat through 45 minutes of meditation. What have you noticed about your mind? Is it a stable thing? You know what's going on in there? Anybody want to just make a little one-sentence assessment? What's going on in there? It's chaos. It's just chaos. It thinks anything it wants, doesn't it? And then it just keeps going. Isn't that not true? And yet we act as if everybody else's mind is solid. You see? They're bad. They're this, they're that. But they're just like us. Many just endless things are just going through their mind. There's no solidity there. Right? And why are these things going through their mind? Because of the causes and conditions that they have lived with and grown up with and continue to function with. Let's just talk about this for 2 minutes. Is that clear? Anybody have a story that they think is real and true about themselves, life, their past, whatever, their parents? See, all we know is the fact, right? See, that's a fact. My right hand hit my left hand, right? Everybody see that? Okay. See, we can agree on the facts, but why that occurred, we don't know, do we? We can guess. We can hypothesize. But the only thing we can agree on is that happened, right? That's true for everything. So, we all look at the world, we see the world, we hear the world, right? And yet, how we put it together is not based on the facts, are they? Right? That young man, whoever or wherever they are who did those shootings, they had put together the facts of life in their own way, hadn't they? That's all that had happened. And they came up to a conclusion. And everybody sitting in this room may have been looking at the same facts of life and putting it together in a totally different way. Is that true? Okay. The only difference is what? The mind that is putting that together. The facts are the same. The world is diverse. There are lots of different people in this world. Is that a fact? Yeah. Can you see? That's a fact. That's where we all agree. Whether we like that or don't like that, that is not based on reality. That's based on what? What? What's it based on? Our perceptions, our ideas, the way we organize these things. It's not real or true. Thich Nhat Hanh said, ideas are not things to kill and die for. They're just ideas. Thich Nhat Hanh also said during the Vietnam War, people, because, you know, they're killing their brothers, thinking they're killing an idea, something called an enemy, right? Because people aren't living in reality. The reality is we're all the same. All human beings are the same. They want to be happy, and they don't want to suffer. Is that true? They want their loved ones to be happy. They don't want their loved ones to be suffer, right? All human beings want to have enough to eat, want to have shelter, want to have clean water, want to have health care. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's very simple, isn't it? Isn't it? Why is it so complicated? Because people have so many ideas about reality and don't live in reality. Right? Now that's somehow easier to see on a bigger level, but it's harder to see on a very personal level. Anybody have a story about life that they think is true? Don't be scared. Anyhow, this is important. So if, you know, we need to be willing to all our most personal stories about who I am. I'm a this kind of person. I'm a that kind of person. That's just a story. I had this kind of childhood. I had that kind of, it's a story. Isn't it? My mother is this. My mother was, my father was that. It's a story. Human beings are much more complex than a story, as well as all the human beings that we encounter in life. They had their causes and conditions that created them. That's all anybody is. That's all we are. When we understand that, we don't hate. We're not angry. We understand. And we're compassionate because we understand they suffer. They suffer. I don't know the people who did the killing today, but I'll tell you one thing I know. They suffer. These were not happy human beings, fulfilled human beings who felt connected to others, who felt loved. I know that. You know that, right? That's why they do these things. Before I take this conversation into a little another direction, are there any questions about this? Not necessarily personal, but does what's been said so far make sense to you or not? Please feel free. Yeah, good. Give me a story. Like what? Let me hear it. Just make it up. Theoretically. What? A business partner. That's your story. Okay. See, okay, stop. What did they do? Just give me an example. What did they, in reality, what did they do? I mean, no. It's a fact. I mean, let's say they embezzled money. I don't know. All right, you know what I mean? See, it's very important. What is your name? Nick. It's very important that we understand that there is a reality that is observable, right? Okay, such as, you know, like, everybody see this, if you're not blind, right? Everybody sees this. You see, we all can agree that this is this. Right. Now, once we begin to define it, we even, so if English is your language, you would say what? Oh, I see the what? If your language is Spanish, you would say what? Flores. Or if your language, anybody have another language? What? What? What'd you? Fleur. Oh my God. Is she crazy? This is a flower. What did you say? Fleur? It's crazy. It's a flower. You see, we could start arguing just about that. Right? Okay. You see, that's an observable fact. Embezzlement. You know, there was money there, now it's not there. Okay? We could say that's a fact. Now, everything after that, Nick, is your interpretation. You say what? Shouldn't have done it. He says what? Do you think in his mind he may have a reason why he did it? That made perfect sense to him? I'm certain. See there, you see the problem we're in. Now, I'm not saying we're going to step back from the world. Oh, everybody's got their story. It's all fine. All right? I'm not saying that, okay? But I'm saying we have to understand what's going on here. Is that clear? What? Well, you can communicate. That's kind of one way we have. Do you remember, I don't know why I popped in, you remember Les Miserables? Remember? You remember? Jean Valjean, he stole what? He stole. What? He stole a loaf of bread. Remember that? For those of you who don't know, it's a famous, quite long novel by Victor Hugo. And it all really begins with this very poor man, right, who lived, I think it was his... Not his children, like his nieces and nephew. They were starving or something, yeah. And he saw a loaf of bread in a window in somebody's house, and he stole it. Fact. Right? Right? Fact. Now, in the eyes of the law, he was what? A thief, a criminal. Right? But why did he steal that loaf of bread? Was he a criminal? Oh. You see? He's got his story, doesn't he? Some people don't care about the story. Right? You stole a loaf of bread, you go to jail. But other people might want to hear the story and go, maybe there's a reason people steal. And that's just one example. We don't know, do we? So, we see so much of the way we're so quick to judge, you know, is based on very scanty information, most of which is coming. See, Nick's response to the business partner's action, it's inappropriate, is based on what? just in case he's listening. Right. Yeah. No, but I thank you for stepping forward. You know, again, it's hard to admit, but even for you to say it's inappropriate is based on your value system. Right? You know? And so other people have different values. It's a strange world. But we think that our value system, without even a thought, is what? Right. Right? That is the subjectivity of our thoughts and belief. We absolutely believe we are right. Right? The problem is if we are right, then everybody else who doesn't agree with us is what? Wrong. Very simple. It doesn't mean that we don't have values, that we don't have ideas, but we have them with a humility, you know. We don't know if this is true, do we? Absolutely. So is that clear, Nick? Yeah. No? Yeah. So again, all we want to see is there is kind of an observable, we call it consensual reality, that everybody can agree on. You know, things we see, things we smell, things we hear. But after that, it begins to get into, you know, just our own conditioning, our own value system. And where did that come from? Our minds and the data that we've received in our life, right? It's not easy to step back and believe that because it all seems so real to us and true. You know, it's interesting to think. Do you know what goes on? Everybody know what goes on in their own mind? What goes on in your own mind? All the time, from the moment you get up to the moment you go to bed. What goes on? What? Thoughts. Okay? Thoughts, stories, emotions, perceptions, memories, right? That's going on in 6 billion people's, that's what everybody's doing. That's what's going on here. So how do you develop a consensual reality? Not easy. Right? Especially when so much is being distorted these days. Very hard. Right? Very hard. That's why we need a place within ourselves that we can come back to. So I want to come back now to the meditation. There's got to be a place that each one of us can come back to that is clear, that is open, that is present, that can observe what is arising with some kind of dispassion and objectivity and some understanding of what's going on. They're just thoughts. They're just thoughts. And they just come and go, come and go, come and go. Is that true? Now, so this is all very psychological and very beneficial to understand this. But Buddhism goes one more very interesting, important step in Buddhist psychology. It asked the question, well, why don't we all do it? Everybody close your eyes. Okay. So just kind of establish yourself in mindfulness. Just get grounded. Just relax. And just be aware that thoughts, feelings, sensations are just arising and passing. You're just be aware of that. Be aware that you're hearing my voice, you're hearing. Just kind of be in that place where you are aware. You're aware of your stories, you're aware of your perceptions, you're aware of your ideas, you're just aware of the thoughts that are arising. Just be aware. You can even be aware of your issues, be aware of your problems. Be aware of your likes and dislikes. Just be aware of whatever you want to be aware of. You could even say to yourself, I'm aware that I'm thinking. I'm aware that I'm hearing. I'm aware that I'm remembering. I'm aware that I'm fantasizing. I'm aware of what I'm feeling. You know, you can just kind of do that. Notice all the things that you're aware of. I'm aware that I think I'm a good person. I'm aware that I think I'm a terrible person. I'm aware that I think I had a wonderful childhood. I'm aware that I think I had a terrible childhood. I'm aware that I think I have a good life. I'm aware that I think I have a terrible life. I mean, you know. I'm aware that I'm loved. I'm aware that I'm unloved. I'm aware that I'm happy. I'm aware that I'm unhappy. Think of all the things that you could possibly be aware of as your mind unfolds. Now, what I'd like you to do is just shift your attention away from all the things that you're aware of, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, ideas, all those things. And in your mind, just be aware of that which is aware of all things. Whatever it is, you know, I am aware of this, I'm aware of that, I think of this, I think of that, I like this. But when you just look at that which is aware of all these things, or has all these likes and dislikes, or that which has all these issues and is aware of all these issues, and become aware of that in you. It's like you just shift. It's like you've been looking out through your eyes at something, and now you're just becoming aware of that which is looking out through the eyes. What is that? Just make that shift. A moment ago, we were very focused on all the things we're aware of, and now we're kind of focused on that, whatever it is that's aware of all these things. Good things, bad things, it doesn't matter. Just take a shift and kind of see if you can move into that place that's very just aware of all these things, millions of things, sights, sounds, feelings, perceptions, issues, ideas. Just shift into that part of yourself that's aware of all these things. You might say that's me or whatever you say. But just shift into that and feel what that's like to all of a sudden just be present to that which is simply aware of all these things. And notice what begins to happen when you do that. So we have all these stories, but now you're going, but who's aware of all these stories? And you kind of shift your attention to that which is aware of all this stuff. And notice what happens when you shift away from the objects of your awareness to that which is aware. Notice what happens within you. What shifts, if anything? Space opens up. Anybody else? Just very simply, what happens when you shift? Yes. What does that actually feel like? What does it actually feel like in your body, mind? What happens? You get a little more, like space, things are more, there's more space, a little more distance. What? Gets quiet. All of a sudden it gets quiet. Anything else? What? Relaxed. Okay. Anything else? Just a feeling state. What? Yes. Lightness gets a little lighter. Things lighten up a bit. Yeah. Woo. Yes. It disintegrates. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Good. Because you're trying to figure it out. See, what's your name? Cat, I would say cat. The question would be, what is it that's trying to figure it out? You see, don't get caught. See, figuring out is just more thoughts. See, like, what's trying to figure it out? Shift into that. Then how does that feel when you shift into that which is trying to figure things out? Not the figuring out. It's busy, busy, busy. But when you shift into that which is trying to figure it out, what happens? Just try it right now. Shift into that part of you that's a little more spacious, yeah. And that little tension about figuring things out and not being able to figure out, what happens to all that? Yeah. Feels better? Yeah. There you go. Anybody else? What? You can actually feel it, yes. What? Yeah. Sorry, not getting the signal up there. So people are saying things, this is because we live stream it for members who aren't here. So people are saying things like relaxation, it gets relaxing, spacious, things slow down, distance, lightness. What am I missing? What? Gets quieter, a little space, calmer, peaceful. So this is an area where sort of Buddhist psychology begins to separate from kind of the psychological, right? Dealing with thought, thoughts aren't true, thoughts are unreal, It's like, oh. It says, well, the real thing is, what's thinking all these thoughts? What is that? It's funny, the other day I was doing interviews and somebody was just saying to me, oh, God, I realized, I am really a mess. It's like, finally, I get it. I'm just a mess. I'm neurotic as all hell. I'm just a mess, Fred. And I said, well, that's very interesting. Because somebody was just telling me very dispassionately and objectively about herself that's a mess. And I said, just for a moment, just be in that whatever you are who was just telling me this story about this neurotic, screwed up person. What is that like? And then she goes, wow. It's kind of calm, and objective, and does that part have any issues? No. Well, that's interesting. Who are you? Which one are you? You see, which one are you? See, what's the problem? And everybody's doing that, right? See? Just like at the same time, there is this Alaya, storehouse consciousness, is endlessly regurgitating our stories about everything. Is that true? Right? Everybody know what that's like? What's it like? What? It's a hot mess. That's a good way of putting it. Anybody else want to pretty it up a little bit? it's a hot mess. Anybody else want to, what? It's ceaseless, it's wearying. What's it like, this mind that endlessly has issues, endlessly upset, endlessly agitated, endlessly needy, endlessly wanting? What's that like? It's exhausting. Can you see it? Yeah. And it's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because it is exhausting. Right? You're totally sane. It is exhausting. And yet, at the same time, there's a part, see? See what you just did? You just said very clearly, it's a hot mess. And if I said to you, Teresa, that part of you, which just very, with a smile on her face, said, it's a hot mess, what does it feel like to be her? It feels good. Well, that's interesting. A moment ago, it felt terrible, right? Because I thought for the moment that I was who? The hot mess. It does not feel good to be a hot mess, does it? It doesn't feel good to be screwed up. It doesn't feel good to be neurotic, does it? It doesn't feel good to have endless issues. There are people who I know who have been working on issues for 50 years. And they always have believed in the hope that when they work through this one, when I work through this issue, then everything will be what? Okay. Right? And you may have a few days or weeks of relief. And then what happens? Anybody know what happens? Right? There's an issue you forgot about. I forgot I had that issue. And now I got to work through this one. Better call my therapist, right? Good, I got a better. Right? Yeah. And that is true. And yet, there is a part of us, a part of our mind, the most essential part of our mind, that has no issues. That even in the midst of all that, if we can drop the story, drop our identification with the issues, and just relax and just become aware. And what we just did here, you can do all day long. Just stop for a moment, just right now. Everybody close your eyes. You're right in the middle of your day, work, whatever you do, you know, you're right. Work, relationships, family, society, you know, all this stuff, right? And you're agitated, right? And you know it doesn't take much to agitate. Somebody's talking about big time agitation. We just say little things. We just, all during the day, people are irritating us, people are, right? Little frustrations, little irritation, things aren't going our way. Right? All day long, a little irritation, tiniest thing. Toast got burnt or something. Terrible things are happening. Right? And all of a sudden, you stop and you relax and you come back to your breath. You notice, just do it. You notice, oh. You all of a sudden become aware that you have a body and you feel your body. And you become aware of your breath. And you take a couple of mindful breaths, just a couple. You know, you're in the middle of your day, you don't have hours, just a few moments, just stop. You relax, you stop. Back to your breath, to your ground. Breathing in, I'm aware that I'm breathing in. See, and as soon as you say to yourself, I'm aware that there's frustration in me, I'm aware that there's irritation in me. I'm aware that there's anxiety in me. Whatever it is, you have made a shift. You are now mindful. You are aware. And what we want to learn to do is to be identified with that's aware of what's arising and not identify with that which is arising. Anybody ever try to deal with impulse control, their impulses? What? Anybody ever try to deal with their impulses? Yeah? How do you do it? I mean, it's simple. How do you do it? What? Right. Yeah. Pause. Become aware that what? You have an impulse, right? And give it some space. Don't act on it. You know, you don't have to kill the impulse. You go, I'm aware I have this crazy impulse, you know, self-destructive impulse, toxic impulse, or just harmful, you know? Not good. Create space. You identify with that which is aware of that. And then it'll just dissipate. Or you can just remind yourself of, you know, that this is something you don't want to do anymore, right? But if you don't have that capacity to stop, create space, and create some objectivity between you and your thoughts, your impulses, your desires, your, you know, your whatever, your feelings, you know, whatever's going on, your dramas. If we don't have that capacity within ourselves, then we're what? We're lost. We'll be swept away. Right? I know one thing about this young man who pulled these triggers and killed these people. He did not have that ability. Did he? Very dangerous not to have that ability. Especially when there's a lot of toxicity around and within. People have no self-awareness. No self-awareness of what's going on inside them, and no self-awareness that those are human beings just like me. Right? When people don't have that, then anything can happen. Thich Nhat Hanh said, when people don't see that everyone's their brother and sister, but sees people as enemies, which is a label, then harm can happen. So this teaching is very personal, very helpful personally, but it's very important for the world. Right? So any questions about how to practice this? How to practice this in your day? This is again why many people, you might have heard this, about thoughts, and thoughts aren't real, and, you know, stories need to be challenged, you know, right? Many of you have read the books and heard the talks and all that, but why don't we live it? Because we don't practice. It's got to be practiced. So, again, it's good to get it theoretically, but we got to begin by learning just to stop during the day. Just learn to stop. Once an hour, can't stop once an hour, stop every 2 hours. Can't stop every 2 hours, begin with every 3 hours. Right? Stop. Come back to yourself and just become aware of what's going on inside you. I am aware. Right? Now we have a chance, don't we, to transform. But if we don't have that, we'll just zoom along. Unconsciously, that's what it means to be unconscious. We're not aware. It's like we're asleep, right? When we're asleep at night, we're not aware of what's going on around us, are we? We're asleep. And many of us live a life where we're asleep. We're not aware. This is why in Buddhism we talk about awakening, waking up. That's what it means. We're awake to reality. No longer asleep at the wheel of our life. So any questions or anybody want to challenge me? That's fine. Disagreement? Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Right, because you have not become convinced yet that, so Charlie's, sorry, I'm sorry, I forgot to look up today. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so Charlie's saying in his own experience, he's aware that anger's arisen, he's also aware that he's aware of that, and he's at a choice point. Yeah, so Let's say you're an alcoholic, right? And you're aware, right? That you're an alcoholic and you have a desire. You're aware that I have a desire to drink, right? So you're aware that you have a desire to drink. At that moment, you have what? If you're aware, you have a what? A choice. How are you going to make the choice? Well, that's the wrong answer. You can keep doing that for a while, but oftentimes, if you make the right choice, whatever your relation to alcohol is, but if it is unhealthy or toxic for you, you remember, oh, I've made the commitment not to drink. See, if we don't realize that anger is a toxic emotion, that when we get angry, our mind gets clouded and we act and we speak in ways that are harmful, then anger becomes a choice. So we have to, I'm just giving like the meditative part of it. Yeah, but we have to kind of have criteria and values. Yeah, what's my relationship to anger? What's my relationship to hate? What's my relationship to intolerance? What's my relationship to, what's my relationship to these things? That's right. That conditions then, let me give you a big one and then we'll end. How about, do I want to suffer anymore in this life? Try that one on. Next time you're in some kind of afflictive mind state, are you thinking, gee, is this really what I want to be doing with my time? Being miserable? You see how silly it sounds, but it's like, have I made that, am I clear within myself? Yeah, I don't want to be miserable anymore. I don't want to suffer anymore. I want to be happy. I want to be at peace. Yeah, I don't want an agitated mind. I want to be at peace. Oh, see, if I haven't made that choice, then, I could choose agitation, anger, drama. Yeah, I could just go with drama all day long. There are people who do that. They keep themselves in a continual state of arousal. Drama, drama, drama. Always have issues, right? Is that clear? But, at some point you step back and go, is that the way I want to live? Is that the kind of person I want to be? You see? And then you start making choices. What am I doing to myself? Anger, while it feels very good to be self-righteous, right, and everybody else is wrong, it's really not a happy mind state. Right? It's not very enjoyable to be angry. There are other mind states which are more enjoyable. So we'll end with that. Thank you.